Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford. Hello, everybody.
So a heads up for all our listeners. We're going to be having a contest where you can win fabulous prizes. There's two prizes being given away to one person. You're going to need a pencil and paper. So if you're in a place where you can get that easily while listening, I probably want to go and do that. Our guest tonight is Elliot Jacobson, discussing table game design and other matters. Elliot's segment will be in 15 minutes or so, but he's in the studio and just may see fit to join the conversation before then, and if so, he's welcome. Last week, Michael, you announced your bets on the Academy Awards, where you bet $18,000 on various heavy favorites. How did that go?
It went well. I won all six bets that I made. As you said, I bet $18,600. My win was $2,750 for a 14.8% profit.
Now, so you mostly bet the favorites, and this was a heavy night for favorites, although there was an upset where Meryl Streep, she won over Viola Davis. So how were you able to dodge the upset?
I did not bet that, and I would not categorize that as an upset on the internet casinos. That was close to a 50-50 thing between Streep and the other actress you just mentioned. And since that was not a bridge jumper bet, I stayed away from it.
Well, good. I'm glad you didn't jump off the bridge. Yesterday at the South Point was triple point days between noon and 9 p.m. There was a mix-up there. The mailer said it was two times points all day. And then halfway through the month, they said, well, we're going to have triple points between noon and 9. Now, the way it was enforced is it was, other than from noon to 9, it was triple point, or excuse me, it was single points rather than double points. When Mr. Gahn made up the promotion, he had forgotten that he had announced double points. So a lot of players were unhappy about that. I spoke to Mr. Gahn today, and I said, well, I had announced double points on the radio show and a couple internet posts, and it did not affect my score in the casino. It kind of embarrassed me a little bit, and he said he'd look into it. It turns out that they do not have the technology to do this, to fix it. Unless they do it manually, and it's going to take somebody more than 80 hours to do it manually. So they're not going to fix it. He apologizes. He's going to be our guest next week, and we'll bust his chops for a little bit next week. And if he's come up with a way he can solve it by next week, he'll tell us then. All right. Now, Shaq, you asked our listeners last week to tell us the casino in Clark County with the most single deck blackjack games playing 3-2 on naturals. I saw in our emails we had several listeners submit questions, submit answers for at least three different casinos, maybe four. Did we have a winner?
Yes, we did. Our winner is Andrew Kircher from San Francisco. He did not submit the right answer until Sunday, so listeners out there, don't feel that you have no shot at these things. Many questions in the past have gone completely unanswered. So if you know the right answer, there's a good chance that you'll win the prize if you submit an answer.
Other people guessed El Cortez and Horseshoe and Hacienda, and they're all wrong.
Yes, all the answers from Las Vegas were wrong. The correct answer is the Riverside in Laughlin, and I think Clark County should have been the clue that I was looking for something outside of Las Vegas. The Riverside has lots of 3-2 single-deck blackjack games. It looked like Elliot had some remark about that. Elliot thought the answer was the Edgewater. They have zero. No, wait. I think they have one legitimate 3-2 blackjack game. Maybe they used to have more, but the Riverside has had a sea of 3-2 single deck games for years, and has resisted the urge to change them to 6-5 as most casinos have.
On Ellie's defense, the Edgewater's right next door to the Riverside, so that'll account for something. There's
actually
a Pioneer in the middle, I guess.
No, the Aquarius is in the middle, but that was still a respectable guess, and may I say kudos to the Riverside.
I thought the Aquarius was on the other side of the Colorado Bell. And obviously I haven't been to Laughlin recently. Now this week it's my turn to submit a question, and the listener will get autographed copies of both of my novels, Sex Lies and Video Poker, and more Sex Lies and Video Poker. Since I had to pay attention to grammar when writing the novels more than I did in nonfiction, this will be a grammatical question. I'm going to read a 12-word sentence a total of 3 times. All you have to do is to punctuate those 12 words to make it into a rhyming couplet. That's it. That's all you have to do. Here it is. There once was a gambler, and he was deaf as a post. Repeating it. There once was a gambler, and he was deaf as a post. Now, you need to punctuate it to make it rhyme. I promise there's no trick as to what punctuation is. It means things such as periods, commas, hyphens, exclamation point, capitalization, and or parentheses. For the purposes of this problem, that list is sufficient. There once was a gambler, and he was deaf as a post. First correct answer, submitted to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, wins the fabulous prize. Michael, do you care to hazard a guess?
No, but I would like to say my favorite rhyming couplet begins with, "There was an old man from Nantucket."
Okay, I would rather not go there. I have some dirty limericks, too. That was not my favorite, but okay. Elliot, have you solved this yet? You're pretty good at puzzles.
I am hard at work, and right now I don't have a clue.
All right, good. That's the right answer, by the way. If he actually came up with the right answer, I would be really annoyed. So I would refuse to give him copies of my novel, and that would teach him. All right. We got an email from a listener who said he actually wanted to know why colleges and universities don't offer courses in professional gambling. I thought about that, and one reason is that most college trustees don't consider professional gambling either respectable or even possible. Another is just the college's teaching professional gambling changes the game completely, and the casinos will adjust to it. And so anything they teach, things change. So now they do teach parts. Now, Elliot used to teach math, and I would suspect in a probability class he would mention certain casino games, such as you're in craps and, you know, what's the probability of rolling a 7? I mean, that would be a pretty standard question on in a probability, easy probability class. And Michael taught a class on the math of gambling, probably from the casino side. So do you have any comment, Mike?
Yes, I taught a course in gaming math at UNLV twice. It was meant for students in the College of Hospitality Management, or whatever they called it. In other words, people aspiring to work in the hotels and casinos of Las Vegas. And I went over the basic math of the games, especially the easier games like Keno and Craps. So it was just an applied math class.
So, but it wasn't. It would not have taught somebody how to be a professional gambler.
Absolutely not. It to be a professional gambler requires a deeper degree of math skills than I got into at the class. Informally, I talked to the students a lot about good plays around town and things they maybe should be and should not be doing when they are casino presidents based on what was going on at the town at the time. But that was all tangential to the thrust of the course.
Okay. Michael, why don't you tell us who Elliot Jacobson is?
I'd be happy to. There's a certain type of person that tends to be attracted to advantage play. Often it is somebody who excels at math and or computers, loves games, and often has an advanced musical ability and is fiercely competitive. In all those areas, Elliot is the poster boy for the advantage player. Elliot has a PhD in mathematics from the University of Arizona. I met Elliot when he was teaching computer science at UC Santa Barbara, which is also my alma mater. In his spare time, Elliot has dabbled in advantage play and his former website, cardcounter.com. He also plays Go, chess, and bridge at a master level and plays about 20 different musical instruments. Shortly after I met Elliot, I introduced him to the world of the gaming mathematician for hire. Usually such mathematicians help the many people out there who think he or she has an X3 card poker. Not only did Elliot get into that arena, but also specializes in internet casino fairness and integrity, and has developed a niche in the area of casino game protection from advantage players. Here to talk to us about creating casino games and beating them is Dr. Elliot Jacobson. Elliot, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Good evening, guys.
Thanks for coming. Your first question. On Tuesday, I attended your presentation at the World Game Protection Conference. Before an audience of about 300 people in surveillance, you laid out some of the latest advantage plays to be on guard for. As a former advantage player, some may have said of you that you have turned to the quote-unquote dark side. You don't seem to see it that way. Would you care to address to the advantage players in our audience why you changed teams?
Well, great question, and I suppose the answer is I changed teams because I don't believe there is a team. The view of the advantage player community when I was part of it was that it was all or nothing. It was an exclusive club. You couldn't be an advantage player and essentially communicate with anybody on the other side of the tables. And early on, I just liked the people. I liked that they enjoyed games. I liked the sense that they were enjoying the casino. So I just fought against my desire to be friends with people on every side of the table, and that's pretty much why I ended up switching. It's not that I didn't want to be friends with the advantage players, but once I even started speaking to guys on the other side, it was all over as far as that went.
Okay.
So now you're exclusively on the side of the casinos, and so like if an advantage player wanted to hire you to teach him how to hole card or something, then would you be available to an advantage player for something like that?
Well, I think one of the misconceptions is that you're either one or the other. For advantage players, they never want to venture into the casino side. But when you're on the casino side, honestly, many of the people don't care about advantage players. And if you want to be an advantage player and also work for a casino, they're fine with it. And many people who work with casinos spend their time actually playing some of the games with an advantage when there are certain opportunities. There's really no exclusion going the other direction. However, it's clear that you shouldn't take advantage of that. You shouldn't take advantage of people you're working for or of situations you happen to know about. But, you know, I'll play once in a while a promotion or something like that, and there's no harm.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's assume I develop a great new table game on my dining room table, and I want to get it into casino, and I come to you to help me. Now, before you have even seen this game or know the details, what would you say are my chances for success? How expensive would it be? And even to find out if the game is good or not.
Well, your chances for success, I've had about 200 clients now. Out of those clients, probably about 15 or 20 actually got their game into a casino so that players could have at it.
Call that 10%.
Okay, and out of those, I think one is having some success now. So there's a couple of good games in there that maybe if there weren't so many games flooding the market would have a better chance maybe 10 years ago or something. But right now, I would say I have about 15 clients with games in the casinos at various numbers, 5, 10, 3 casinos, whatever. And one game that looks like it's going to be a good success. So my advice to you would be it's going to cost you a lot of money, maybe $50,000, $100,000. It's going to cost you several years of your life. You're going to have expenses come at you from every direction you've ever considered, and you've got to really love what you're doing, and you don't have much of a chance. But I'm on your side. You know, I want every client I have to succeed.
That sounds, I want to rush right in and do that.
As someone who does the same thing, Elliot, I can mirror your experience, except I don't even have a client who has the success story. Most of them have fallen flat on their face, and a few of them have had a few placements, but none of them have, I think, made any money. But on to my next question. As a player, you were backroomed by a major Las Vegas strip casino. Can you tell us more about what happened?
Well,
let's make this a 5-minute or less story. This could go on for a long time.
Okay. The quick story is that I was hole carding a game, and as has happened to many people over the years, I was not viewed very kindly by the casino I was playing in, and I was surrounded by two uniform guards and two guards who weren't in uniform, and put in handcuffs and hauled away from the table and into a back room and all the usual things that you hear about in the stories that people have to tell about these things, where Metro wasn't called and I wasn't told why I was there. No reason was given for me actually being held. In the end, I was released without any charges. And honestly, that sort of situation is a very traumatic thing to go through. I don't quite know who gets out of that unscathed. It's a tough thing to go through. So yeah, that happened to me a few years ago.
Sounds like a Bob Nersessian lawsuit. He's been on the show several times. Was that part of it later, or?
Well, I'm going to not
not even go there.
I'm not going to go into anything further.
Okay. I asked for it short. He gave it to me short. What could you tell our players about casino surveillance that they probably don't know?
Well, surveillance is, let's see. It's a lonely job. I don't know whether that's one way of putting it. I have been in a couple of surveillance rooms. I don't believe many of your players have ever sat in a surveillance room. You are looking at a bunch of TV screens. You're just a couple guys hanging out with joysticks, looking at these screens. And there's just a sort of a drumbeat of monotony to it. But yet every minute is critically important to be watching. And it is sort of that classic tale of just as soon as you're not looking, that's when it's going to happen. So, I think, having been in the room, I think just the experience of being in that room is really a stark and intense feeling that I don't know if your listeners have had that described.
I don't know if you're the best one to ask, but do you think there's a sense of low morale in the surveillance room? Like they're the lowest people in the casino, maybe like people in internal affairs might be viewed in a police department?
Well, some people really want that job. I know somebody who was a dealer. He was security on the floor. worked other positions where he was around people, and he actually just enjoyed the quiet and the not having to interact with a lot of other people and players, and that's where he wanted to be. It was the right place for him. So I think there is a type who wants that job and doesn't feel as though they're at the bottom of the ladder, although I know that's the case for many.
Okay. So one of the tips you gave at the World Game Protection Conference this week was on what to look for when out scouting the casino floor for a table where the dealer might be flashing. Can you tell our listeners what you told the other side at the conference?
Well, I hope both sides are listening to this, but yes, there are a lot of the novelty games where you want to look out for flashing dealers, and three-card poker was the original game that started this revolution. It's called one-card poker by those who have played against it. But one of the things that I noticed is you can look at the layout itself and look for the alignment of the shuffler, how it's positioned next to the table. And if you simply look at the shufflers and look for obstacles, like discard tray or the edge, the cushion edge of the table, that are in the way of between that shuffler and the layout, look for that first and then look at what the game is. Because when you see that physical defect, good things are bound to happen. Now, one way to think about it is if you're playing a shoe game, imagine playing blackjack with a shoe game and having the discard tray in front of the shoe as the dealer is dealing the cards. You would never have that in blackjack. But yet you see that all the time, that kind of layout situation in the other games. So that would be just one tip for the listeners. For those who are players, look for it. Those who are working on the other side, fix it.
If you were a player looking for hole carding, and what type of dealer, generally speaking, would be the most likely to flash a card, and which type of dealer would be the least likely to flash a card?
I don't want to get into cultural stereotypes, but there are cultural stereotypes that answer that question, and I will just leave it to the listeners to sort of go out and discover those on their own. But in general, you're going to have your best chance at a full table with a tired dealer. So that would be one way to go looking.
Look for somebody who's tired.
Well, at a full table where they're having to have a lot of action between rounds, so there's a lot that they're taking care of. And so they tend to forget this one part of their procedure.
Okay. And probably percentage-wise, more men are readable than women. Without going into cultural differences, we can go into sexual differences. Is that fair? He says, move on. He says it the other way around.
I want you to say this answer because I don't want to say it.
Okay. Generally speaking, would Asian women be good to read or non-good to read if I'm going to ask a question?
Well, why don't you go to a casino and look at a few Asian women and then report back?
I enjoy looking at Asian women in a casino, but I'm a married man and Shirley frowns on some of that.
If I may address that question, I know we're interviewing Elliot.
You're married to an Asian woman.
Yes, and I enjoy looking at Asian women too. But I tend to find that elderly female dealers tend to make the best flashers. But
thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Elliot, another topic of your talk on Tuesday was edge sorting. And this is a new frontier in advantage play. I know that it's hard to explain without visual aids, but can you give us the crash course on what edge sorting is?
Certain playing cards have a design that is cut all the way to the edge of the card. And the particular pattern that's very common is a diamond pattern imprinted on the back of the card that crisscrosses at 45-degree angles from one edge to the other, top to bottom, side to side, whenever you see that pattern and it goes all the way to the edge of the card, then if you look closely, you often see that one side of the card is actually cut so that the diamonds are complete and full, and the other side of the card is cut so that the diamonds are only halfway there. And this can be used by rotating the cards in one direction, or you can indicate, for example, high cards in the other direction, low cards, or you can sort the cards to indicate two types of cards. For example, in Baccarat, there was a recent instance of this actually being done here in Las Vegas, where the high cards, 6, 7, 8, 9, were oriented one way in the shoe, and the other cards were the other way. And so the players were able to read the cards that were played in the hands and then determine which hand to bet on.
They reused the same cards in Baccarat. Usually the cards get destroyed and they throw
right.
them all away.
There was another situation. This had to do with a particular scam that some players pulled off, and a shoe was brought in that was already edge sorted.
Ah, okay, good. So, like, if you were edge sorting in blackjack, if you just had the 8, 9s and 10s sorted one way, then you would hit a 14 or 13 against a 6 much more often than otherwise, because you know a small card's coming out.
Well, essentially, face, non-face for the whole card read, plus you know a next card, face, non-face read. So, yeah, there's a significant edge for the player there.
How can many people do it? It's like I said, I've heard it's really difficult.
I know of very few situations, but I was actually know a casino here in town where it did take place at blackjack successfully by a team that pulled it off for several months in a row at a double deck game. So I know for a fact that yes, this has been done successfully by some APs.
Okay, so in your presentation, you warned that one of the ripest areas in advantage play is exploiting the plethora of new casino games coming out. Can you give us some examples of flawed games that have reached the casino floor that were beaten by advantage players?
Well, sure. There, of course, is three-card poker with its now infamous hole card problem, but probably the new wave of advantage play in these games, if you go away from hole carding, is that there are new card counting opportunities. For example, just about every blackjack variant that's been hitting the floor has its own card counting that would work for it. Whether it's blackjack switch or it's triple up, triple action, what is that? I'm sorry.
Triple attack blackjack?
Yeah, triple attack blackjack. Or Spanish 21, all those sorts. And also side bets for blackjack. Anytime you have a bet that will persist over several rounds of the cards being dealt, you have an opportunity to count it. And, of course, there's the dragon bet in Easy Baccarat that we recently worked on together, and you got the panda side bet. So there's a whole host of these things that are beatable via card counting, and that's a whole new category of games.
Good stuff.
What about the category of dealer mistakes? I was playing a game called 7-14-21 at the Palms for an hour and a half, and I benefited from three separate mistakes over that hour and a half. And it turned it's a new game, and the dealers just didn't know.
Well, there are mistakes that tend to repeat for certain games. For example, in Blackjack Switch, there's a push on a dealer 22, and a dealer who's coming from a regular blackjack onto a rotation dealing blackjack switch often will pay the first couple of hands, or sometimes you'll find that error being made because they haven't yet adjusted to the fact that on this game you have to push that hand, or if they're going from one poker variant to another, then there's so many pay tables, you might find them using one pay table from another game to pay out the wrong game. So there are a lot of errors taking place in these games. And also, every time there's a new game, there may be several days before errors are corrected on these games, before the rules are really fully understood. So I know of an example that took place downtown where one of the pit bosses didn't like the pay table of a game. A pair of jacks pushed, and so he said, well, I think I'll just make that pay 1-1 because he liked that better, and so he arbitrarily changed the rule of the game, and for 3 days the player could go in there with about a 5% house edge over the house.
I'm sorry, I missed that one.
Yeah, I would have enjoyed that one, actually. Good. So what kind of game? Now, one advantage player who does this kind of thing told me that he really liked it if when the pit boss came over to look at something at the game, he had to read the pay schedule on the felt. That meant that the pit boss had no clue as to what to look for in terms of advantage play on that game. Because this pit boss is in charge of 8 different games, and each one has its own rules. And so the advantage players really like that.
Right. Well, there's just a lot of opportunity right now. And one of the things that is interesting to look at is to actually try and find literature on these games. Go to Amazon or Google and start searching these games, and you simply don't find literature describing how to play these games, books on them or anything. And so this is ripe for advantage players because there are so many games that have so much vulnerability right now, and there's so little information. There's almost a conspiracy of silence from the developers as far as providing advantage play information, and the reason for that is because games with defects don't sell. And so a game that may have problems with how the printing is on the felt or with just some rules that allow a player to gain an edge, they don't want to do the research on it. They don't want other people to know. They don't want to inform. I'm not saying everyone's like that. There are a lot of people who do their due diligence. But there are many games that make it to the floor with flaws that can be exploited and are being exploited, and the work just isn't being done.
So when game inventors come to you with their game idea, you must instantly see the holes in these games and vulnerabilities to advantage play, and it's your job to warn them of these things. What do they typically say when you try to warn them?
Well, there are three responses. The first is they ask me to fix it. The second is that they ask me to quantify it so that I can describe the existing game, what the actual error is. And the third is they want me to not talk about it or tell anyone. Now, I've had mostly the first two, people who actually either want me to fix it or quantify it. But a few people just would rather have you not tell them that. But, yeah, as a former advantage player, it's easy to spot those things, and you go out of your way to let your people know.
As someone who's written many of such reports, I find they don't mind the warning, but they do mind if you put the warning in your report, and they always ask you to take it out.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying about the conspiracy of silence in this business. Is games with known protection they just don't sell. And so that's the work
appropriately.
Well, I think that all games have issues. And so the question is, why should you just decide not to put those games that have known weaknesses on the floor when all games have weaknesses? So what we really need is just better information from the people who are actually selling and licensing these games. They have to be all doing their due diligence to a certain level, or else, well, advantage players are just going to have great times. And this is probably the best time ever right now to be an advantage player. There are more opportunities. It's easier than it's ever been, honestly.
This may have to be our last question, depending on how long your answer is. But facial recognition software, is it good? Does it work in Vegas or other places? Do many casinos have it? What's the status of this?
I think there's a misconception that casinos are really trying to figure out who everybody is, like by going onto bulletin boards or websites or tracking IDs or things like this. It's way overblown. For the most part, casinos that you go to around the country just don't have the money, they don't have the training, and they don't care. They have better things to do, more important things to do. But there are a few casinos in Las Vegas that really have their stuff together. And they will force you through little squeeze points. They make the layout so that they'll get a clear shot of your face. They'll run you through. For the most part, if you have any sort of way to identify you, including possibly images scanned from your driver's license, there are going to be a couple places who are probably going to know who you are. But I think that they are really the exception. There are a small number of casinos that are that good and that invested.
It's a fair guess that you do not want to tell us which casinos in Vegas do have the successful player facial recognition. Is that a reasonable assumption?
There are some very high-class casinos in Las Vegas.
High-class meaning built in the last few years, probably. Okay, let's go on. Actually, we have several more questions on the list. We have other things to talk about tonight, so we're going to likely be asking Elliot back in the future. I hope you say yes to the invitation.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much, Elliot Jacobson. Michael, what did we learn?
Wow, that was some very good stuff there. I hope the Advantage players were listening carefully to that interview. To be honest with you, I know Elliot very well and knew he was going to say everything that he said.
So you learned nothing tonight.
Well, to be honest, I just came from Elliot's talk on Tuesday, and it was an outstanding talk where he laid out many of the things he just spoke about. I did not know that about the choke points about casino surveillance and getting a good shot at the face. That's something I've never really paid much attention to, so that was interesting.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that either. And it makes sense when you think about it. That's one difference between video poker and table game players. Video poker, you have to show ID for a player's card and W2Gs and stuff. And so there's it's a totally different set of issues. Good. Now, Michael, what's happening at the Wizard of Odds and website, and what's happening with your computer?
Well, my computer had a major malfunction with the motherboard. This was the same Hewlett-Packard computer that caught on fire a few years ago. So I went with a different brand this time. Fortunately, a very skilled computer tech guy helped me find my data and restore it to the new computer, and I promised him a little plug. His business is Ray's Mobile On-Site Computer Repair. Owner is Ray Rand. His phone number is 702-542-6109. And his email is info@raysmobileonsite.com. Ray did an amazing job for me, came to my house twice, lots of phone calls, and his price was so cheap that I demanded he take more.
You paid him more and you gave him a plug.
Yes, and plus I gave him two computers and a computer monitor.
Wow, I may come over to your house and do business for you.
Well, sure. As long as you fix my computer.
That's not my specialty. Okay, now, what about the Wizard of Oz website? Anything happening there?
Well, between my computer problem, this show with Elliot that I did, and being sick, I didn't get a whole lot done with the website. But I did finally release an Ultimate Texas Hold'em game on my website. Wizard of Odds. This is one of my favorite new casino games. It has a very complex strategy. The number of people that know optimal strategy is zero because it's never been quantified in writing. But I'm proud to say that this demo game, which was very well done, also has an advice feature. So you can either set it to always advise only on mistakes or never. I like to advise only on mistakes. And so when you make a mistake, it will tell you that's not the right play. Here is the expected value of both options. Do you want to stick with your decision or change your mind? So this
This is great. I mean,
yeah, and this took a long time. It was a work in progress for a long time, and my webmaster JB did an outstanding job on it, and I'm very proud of it.
Good. I know there's a strategy card for the game on that. Grosjean did it, and it's available through Huntington Press.
And I'm eager to see his strategy. I have a very complicated one on my site that would never fit on a card, and there's another good one at discountgambling.net, but which is also rather complicated.
All right, let's talk about some of our sponsors. South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. They're having food promotion this month. 300 points get you a free lunch buffet. 600 points get you a free dinner buffet. You keep the points. Double points on St. Patrick's Day. And the class next week, a free video poker class, is called Secrets of a Video Poker Winner. This is not a technical class. It covers such things as which game you should choose, what kind of money management works and doesn't work, dealing with losing streaks, common misconceptions of video poker, our friends at the IRS, etc. The class is noon in the showroom. It's free and everyone is welcome. At the Palms, the Play, Earn, and Win promotions, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. For the first part of the month, you can earn a washing machine or a coffee maker or a vacuum cleaner or lots of other interesting things. As of today, they didn't have the list out of exactly how much these things will cost. We'll talk more about that next week. There is a weekly drawing. This month they are giving away a Jeep Patriot 2012 every Saturday night, beginning this week, 7 p.m. You earn entries by playing. There's also drawings on Friday where you qualified for a chance at the Jeep on Saturday. Now, your virtual tickets are thrown away each week Saturday night, so if you aren't there for the drawing, they disappear, and so you start all over again earning for next week. They have a slot rebate program called Win for Losing, and it's for new members that pays your losses up to $500. It's a generous program, and it has some caveats. One, you must be a non-resident of Clark County to qualify. Two, only losses in the first 24 hours count, up to a maximum of $500. And you get some of the rebate immediately, about 30%, in the form of free play. Some of it between 14 days and 6 months later, about 30%. And the last batch between 3 months and 1 year, about 40%. So rebates must be collected in person at the club's small booth, and there must be at least 14 days between rebate collections. So if you can meet those qualifications and you don't already have a card, it's a good deal. Videopoker.com is also our website. Now, I've mentioned several times that my favorite game at South Point is Quick Quads. My next class won't be in for the fall. Now, you can get the strategy and a book on it for free at videopoker.com/quickquads. But also, they now have a way you can practice online for free with correction. It is, you need to be a gold member at videopoker.com. And their correction is in the form of red light and green light. If you get your answer correct on a hand, you get a green light. If you get it wrong, it's either a red light or yellow light, depending on whether it's a big mistake or a little mistake. So if you're going to play this game, this gives you lots of corrections. Now they have they have forums there where members can post back and forth. I participate on these forums. So you have to be a member of videopoker.com to participate, but membership is free. There was an article in the paper that I saw. Actually, before we get into that, let's talk about next week. Michael Gaughan's going to be our guest. He is the owner of South Point, and he, as several people have suggested questions to ask him, most of the questions were either already on the list or I agreed, some not. I do plan to keep my relationship at South Point, so it will be friendly questions, but there will be some difficult ones too. If you have good questions you want to ask Michael Gaughan, send them to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Now, last week, Shaq, you mentioned that you're going to run up the Stratosphere Tower this coming Saturday. Now, in last week's show, you were playing hurt, coughing like the Dickens, so you were in no shape to go anywhere up a race. Now you seem to be healthier. Are you training? And if you're doing this for charity and people want to donate, how do they do that?
Thanks for asking. I'm feeling better now, and I think I'll be in tip-top health-wise for the climb in 2 days. If this is a charity through the American Lung Association, if you wish to donate, you can go to lung.org. However, if you wish the donation to be in my name, then it's a little more complicated, but you can go to my forum at wizardofvegas.com and do a search on the Stratosphere Climb fundraiser. And the very first post, I indicate a link to the website for this fundraiser. And if you make a donation through that link, then it will go under my name. And if I get up to about 320 in donations so far, and if I get to 500, then I get a free sweatshirt.
Okay.
And you also asked if I've been training. Not as well as I could have. I've only hit the stair machine at the gym 4 times, and I'm going to hit it again tomorrow. But I just climbed Mount Shasta last summer, and I try to stay in good shape. I just did the Las Vegas Half Marathon in 1 hour and 49 minutes, so I think that I'm not going to be any slouch on this.
Good. Now, one thing we forgot to mention is if you wanted to get in touch with Elliot Jacobson, he has a website. And it is jacobsongaming.com, J-A-C-O-B-S-O-N, gaming.com. And that's a good way to get in touch with him. There was an article in the paper about a guy who was gambling in New York, in Pennsylvania, at a casino. He had $2,500. He went to cash in the chips. At that place, you needed to show ID to do it. The casino took his ID. They had a note from the local police department saying this guy was a drug dealer. And so they called the police, and he got arrested. So without the details of going into that, it occurs to me there's huge differences between video poker players and table game players. Video poker players need to bite the bullet in terms of ID. You need ID to get a player's card at most places. And you need to show ID on certain jackpots. And sometimes for any drawings, at some places, if you win a $25 drawing, you have to claim it with your ID and your player's card. Now, for me, this is a cost of doing business. I'm accustomed to it. I'm not on any police wanted list that I know of. And so I'm fine with that. But there's lots of reasons people don't want to show ID. One could be the legal ramifications. One could be they're a minister in a small town and they don't want their parish to know that they gamble. One could be they're going through a divorce and they don't want anything subpoenaed by the wife's lawyer. Or one could be they're using somebody else's ID. One could be they don't want the casino to know who they are because they're an advantage player and they don't want their name and think posted on this facial recognition that is. So if you have any of those issues, real or not, it affects your game of choice. Now, the Chamber of Commerce says, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. If you believe that, you are naive. There are real important consequences for things that you do here. Michael or Elliot, is that something that you have a comment on?
This is something that definitely affects sports bettors. Most sports bettors will size their bets so that any win will be less than $10,000, because any transaction involving cash, whether it be inside or outside of a casino, of over $10,000 necessitates a CTR or cash transaction report. These get reported to the government. And some people believe, I think probably correctly, that if you generate a lot of these, it sets off a red flag to get audited. And nobody wants that, so players are deliberately affecting the way they play to avoid these things.
although it is technically illegal to size your cashing in to avoid the CTRs, it does not seem to be a rule that is widely obeyed.
Yes, and I think that the jackpots on slot machines that pay $1,199 are clearly to avoid are for income tax evasion and tax reporting purposes and helping players avoid that.
Elliot, did you have any?
Yes, I just wanted to chime in on the subject of ID. This is one of the areas of how casinos work that I do object to. I am a strong believer in privacy rights and the ability to go into a business and conduct business without being obligated to disclose your identity and all that information about yourself. So I do wish that there was a way that these systems could be set up to let players who don't cross any legal threshold maintain their
anonymity.
And still be able to carry out their play.
Yeah, but in video poker, you actually, the casino bribes you to give you that information.
Well, you should be able to get that card without giving your ID. That should just be something they do. There's no reason for them to need your ID. If you're playing the games, you should be entitled to play them whether you give them your driver's license or not.
But if they're going to give you 0.25% cash back,
well, tell them your address and let them mail it to you.
Okay, good. I don't know that I would object to that rule that actually taking place in a casino, but I'm not optimistic about it happening in the near future. All right, we have some more guests signed up that we're going to have in the near future. One of them is the inventor of the name of the game. Blackjack Switch. Michael, what do you know about Jeff?
Jeff Hall is indeed the inventor of Blackjack Switch, as well as some other games like Power Blackjack and Burn 20 Blackjack. He is a former Advantage player. He probably still dabbles in it. He is very good at backgammon and poker and card counting. But today he mostly makes his living from Blackjack Switch and from marketing his new inventions. Jeff is a very friendly guy, friend of mine for years, and I think that he's going to be a very fun guest.
Good. Elliot, are you familiar with I know you're familiar with Blackjack Switch. You read about it in your book, Casino Cable Game Design Contemporary,
right?
I don't have in front of me.
I know Jeff. I remember when he first put the game in downtown, and he babysat that game for years. And his story is really one of the great stories about a game developer bringing a small game to success. He really did his job there.
That has a feature in it where when a dealer gets a 22, it's a tie for the players, and it's rather than a... the player wins. Now, this can't be popular with the players, so I'm assuming that it was done to make the math work out. Now, what kind of, do you know offhand how much edge that changes it in the house's favor?
Well, the game itself has under a 1% edge over the player, but I think that rule is a little bit over 7%, isn't it, Mike? Do you know about that?
Yeah, it's in that neighborhood. It's pretty strong in the casino's favor, and nothing else. No conventional rule would have brought the casino that much to offset the switching rule.
Is that worse for the player than the even money on blackjack?
You know, it all balances out, and the house edge in blackjack switch is about the same as conventional blackjack.
Yeah, they actually, it's less than, but it's a real tough game.
The switching strategy can be complicated. But once you switch, the basic strategy is much the same as regular blackjack. There's less splitting and more hitting, and that strategy can be found on my website.
So the strategy there's a lot of different strategy plays.
The switching strategy is the complicated part.
Uh-huh. Very good. All right. So we're just about out of time. So thank you very much. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes. Thank you, Elliot.
Thanks.
Thanks, Elliot.
Good night.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.